The next case is 05-2411, City of Shaker Heights versus Urban Mosley. Mr. Fortunato.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, my name is Christopher Fortunato, counsel for the appellant Urban Mosley. I respectfully move the court for 2 minutes of rebuttal. In this case, Your Honors, this case was originally charged as a misdemeanor, domestic violence threats, in which at trial the charge was reduced to persistent disorderly conduct, a misdemeanor of the fourth degree, DV threats as an M1 under the Shaker Heights Code, and then, of course, was modified at the Court of Appeals level to a minor misdemeanor of disorderly conduct. It is the position of the appellant to submit that disorderly conduct is not a lesser included offense of domestic violence threats. There are three cases at the appellate level that are quite instructive and give excellent analysis to the Deem test and then also later the Barnes application of the Deems test with respect to this matter that I think are illustrative and I think can be dispositive in favor of the appellant in this matter. That would be the Alvey case out of Belmont County, Schaefer case out of the 2nd District, and Neal case out of the 10th District here in Columbus. At page 8 of the Alvey case, the court had written, given the statutory definition of this offense, disorderly conduct is not a lesser included offense of domestic violence because one can cause or attempt to cause physical harm without necessarily causing inconvenience. As the 2nd District explains, and they were looking at the Schaefer case, one may attempt to cause physical harm to another without his or her knowledge, in which case the victim will not have suffered inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm. We concede that in most cases, the action by which one causes or attempts to cause physical harm to another may also cause inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm to that person. But a victim might be wholly unaware of an attempt to cause physical harm, where, for example, the perpetrator throws an object at the victim who's not looking at the perpetrator but misses his target, and thus the victim suffers no inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm.
You're reading those conjunctively. Aren't they disjunctive? Convenience? There's no or, but comma, convenience, annoyance, or alarm. Aren't they? Don't you have to just have show one, or do they all have to be included?
Well, I think they would be separate, Your Honor, and looking at in analyzing from Deem, disorderly conduct would have to be wholly within, as a crime, wholly within domestic violence threats.
But when you're, in your example, somebody throws something at someone from behind them, they don't know it's coming, maybe no alarm, but certainly some inconvenience. You get hit in the head with a brick, you're inconvenienced, are you not? Are we quibbling over words? I guess we have to here, don't we?
I would look at inconvenience in terms of domestic violence as something more of say blocking a sidewalk and not allowing passersby to go forward, that would be in some ways a form of domestic.
Would one be annoyed if they were hit in the back of the head with an object and when they didn't expect it to happen and didn't want it to happen?
Well, I think it could possibly be they would be maybe possibly more than annoyed if the actual injury
probably
happened. In this matter though, the Barnes case out of, I think, 1994 states that the court has to review the two ordinances or the two laws, statutes, in the abstract without looking at the specific facts of the instant case when they're making that determination if disorderly conduct is a lesser included offense of domestic violence.
I just want to clarify, we're not talking in this case about persistent disorderly conduct. That's out of the picture. We're only talking about plain, ordinary misconduct.
Yes, Your Honor. There were, I think the Burgess case had been, which in Burgess had which is a reported case at the appellate level, had made that determination, and I think many courts have followed that. And I think it was there because they said the persistence element was something that was outside of the scope, that was an additional element not within the domestic violence crime. And so the courts have reasoned then that it could not be a lesser included offense. And essentially the first part of the disorderly conduct statute, or the ordinance, because they were substantially similar, the A portion, that first sentence there, the issues of inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm, are the issues, I think, are the elements, either one or all three, that would take the disorderly conduct as a crime outside of the parameters of domestic violence threats. Because as the Schaefer case had stated, inconvenience and this was at page 4 of that opinion, inconvenience is a totally distinct concept and also not a part of the concept of physical harm. Inconvenience can have physical elements but can also be mental in its scope. Thus, applying the Deem standard, inconvenience element does not qualify disorderly conduct as a lesser included offense of assault.
Counsel, may I interrupt you a second? Those cases go to the cause or attempt to cause language in the domestic violence statute and not the domestic violence threats section here under C. And there is a Montgomery County case, State versus Stewart, which says you can look at those different subsections as having different elements and therefore different ordinances in effect under Deems. What do you think of that?
You are correct, Your Honor, that some of these cases apply, I think, They were cases involving the A subsection of the statute as opposed to the C subsection. I think they can be applied to a C argument, a threats argument. I think then what happens in that instance is that, of course, you have the additional element of threats as opposed to in an A crime that you would actually have actual physical contact or where someone is actually assaulted in a family manner of that sort.
But the threats language, that particular ordinance goes on to say that the person is caused to believe. So how could you ever have a situation where the victim in this case would be unaware of action taken by the defendant?
Well, the belief component, of course, brings in a mental aspect that Schaefer discussed, that which was what the Schaefer court had said takes disorderly conduct out of the element of being a lesser included offense, because they construed disorderly conduct more in terms of a physical crime as opposed to one where would have that mental aspect or concept.
I guess my question is, do you agree that A and C are separate and distinct offenses?
I would think, I'm looking for my personal experience as someone who prosecuted as well as someone who defended. I would say that they probably were, because at least in my past experience as an advocate, when you would charge someone who had only threatened under the C, mm-hmm. or where there was an allegation of that, and where someone came in with a black eye or scratches, contusions, then you went with the A charge, and we looked at them in ways as separate kinds of offenses. They're punished separate or differently, at least under the state statutes. They're punished. One is an M1, one is an M4. Shaker Heights ordinances are all M1s, I believe. So I would probably look at them as separate, but within that same family of crimes.
Yes,
though.
Thank you.
Yes. Cases opposite to that go in favor of my learned opponent's position, I believe do not follow it, for the most part, the Barnes method of analyzing and appraising the two separate ordinances or separate statutes, since they're fairly similar. And I think from a textualist approach, an originalist approach, you have to look at the plain language of the laws and determine whether domestic or disorderly conduct is a lesser included offense of domestic violence in this manner. It's sort of like a Venn diagram, I guess, if we remember, everything has to, you have to be completely inside the one circle as opposed to being partially outside the circle. The arguments where domestic violence is analogized to assault, and there were cases where assault or disorderly conduct sometimes was considered a lesser included offense of assault, I think the reasoning is not as tight and as focused as the reasoning in the analysis of Alvey, Schaefer, and Neal. First of all, sometimes with in an argument by analogy, you sometimes fall victim to circular reasoning and begging the question, which do not always go for the best kind of legal reasoning. I think following Deem, and then Barnes as well, that which followed Deem, you have to look at the ordinances in the abstract. You have to determine if the lesser, or if the one, in this case, disorderly conduct, is completely within side the parameters as a crime of domestic violence threats in this matter, because annoyance, inconvenience, and alarm, certainly inconvenience, would be outside the elements of domestic violence threats. The crime of disorderly conduct, therefore, is not a lesser included offense, and the appellant should then be discharged completely. Thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Fortunato. Mr. Keller.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice. The court is faced in this case with having to address the conflict in the appellate jurisdictions, and where I would like to start with respect to argument and discussion is right where the justice picked up when she asked about the distinction between the two subsections in the disorderly conduct and domestic violence statutes. I think that perhaps the more straightforward case, if you will, is the one where an individual is charged, as was Mr. Mosley, under the domestic violence subsection that indicates that there was a threat of physical harm. When one takes a look at the minority viewpoint and the minority arguments concerning that, certainly if an individual is threatened and there is a requirement or a determination that that threat has to be imminent, the only way that you can get to the conclusion that the threat was imminent is that the individual had to have some knowledge of the threat. So I would say in the threat subsection situation under domestic violence, it's fairly straightforward that that would be that disorderly conduct would be a lesser included offense in that instance, because the minority argument that there was no knowledge of the threat wouldn't apply in that instance, because you couldn't even convict on the threat subsection of domestic violence absent a showing that the physical harm was imminent in scope. And I would submit to the court that the only way that you get to the question of imminence is that the individual who was allegedly threatened had some knowledge of the threat. I think the more difficult analysis, perhaps, before the court is the one relating to subsection A that somewhat mirrors that of an assault, where the minority has taken the viewpoint, what happens if the individual is not aware of the potential physical harm, where there was an effort to cause physical harm, but perhaps the victim has no knowledge of it. The appellee would suggest to the court that the line of reasoning in the majority opinions is certainly the one that we would suggest that this honorable court follow. I think Burgess, perhaps, is very insightful in that regard. When Burgess speaks to, and I quote, a person cannot knowingly cause or attempt to cause physical harm to a family member or a member of a household without at the same time recklessly causing him inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm, by threatening harm or by engaging in violent or turbulent behavior. It is not significant that the common elements of domestic violence and disorderly conduct as a minor misdemeanor are not stated in identical language in the statutes, because these common elements are implicit in the conduct that constitutes the defenses. And perhaps as we discuss this, we do have to wrestle a little bit with the Barnes discussion. Certainly there is a requirement that these statutes be read literally, but I think that's kind of a double-edged sword, because if you accept the minority viewpoint, basically what they are doing is going outside of the scope of the statute by saying, what happens in the instance where there is evidence that the alleged victim did not know of the attempt to cause physical harm? Now, the other side of that certainly is that if you look at the ordinances on their face, we do have to look carefully to make sure that they are similar. And I would suggest to the court that one of the interesting subsections that's not really talked about in the minority opinions very effectively is subsection 5 of the disorderly conduct statute.
Because, Mr. Keller,
yes.
If I could interrupt you, you raised an issue here. What part does the evidence at trial actually play when the judge is determining whether to give a lesser included offense? Doesn't it depend on what has come forward in the evidence as to whether the lesser included instruction should be given?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that was the third component of my argument that I was going to make. I think that, I believe it was the Alvey case, it makes it very, very clear that at the end of all of the proceedings, it is indeed the fact finder's determination, and certainly by way of instruction from the trial court in the instance of, say, in my court in Shaker Heights, where everything is a first degree misdemeanor, the defendant would be entitled to a jury. The court would have to make the decision as to whether or not to even instruct on the question of whether a lesser included offense exists. So as the court rightfully points out, as you rightfully point out, if the evidence were to come out that the alleged victim had no clue that the alleged defendant attempted to cause physical harm, then I would suggest that it would be within the trial court's sound discretion to make a decision as to whether or not to give an instruction on a lesser included offense. With respect to the point that I was going to make regarding subsection 5 of the disorderly conduct statute, that I think is a very interesting catch-all to help to refute the minority appellate district's argument. That subsection says creating a condition that is physically offensive to persons or that presents a risk of physical harm to persons or property by any act that serves no lawful and reasonable purpose of the offender. I would suggest to the court that, as Chief Justice Moyer pointed out, there could be inconvenience, and in that particular subsection, I think there's enough latitude to conclude, certainly, that disorderly conduct is indeed a lesser included offense of domestic violence. One of the other things that concerns the appellee as it relates to these issues is, if the court should take the position of the minority appellate districts, we then have to ask the question, because domestic violence so closely mimics or imitates the offense of assault, are we then going to be faced with the question of where there's no family member as the alleged victim, but there is an effort to cause or attempt to cause physical harm, will we then be saying that disorderly conduct is no longer a lesser included offense of assault as well? And this goes back to the issue in Burgess and the argument in Burgess, where they say, you know, domestic violence is indeed very closely akin to that of assault. And I would suggest to the court that that would further, I think, complicate things as it relates to the issue of lesser included offenses in these types of statutes. Lastly, and in conclusion, what I would suggest to the court are just a few things. One, I think certainly in the situation where an individual is charged on a complaint with the C subsection of domestic violence, where there is a threat of physical harm. In that instance, I think the court's analysis should be very straightforward. You cannot get to the issue of imminence as it relates to the physical harm absent some knowledge on the part of the victim that the threat took place. With respect to the more difficult analysis of cause or attempt to cause, we would suggest to this honorable court that the Burgess line of reasoning and the reasoning of the majority be followed, and that the court find that disorderly conduct is indeed a lesser included offense of domestic violence in that instance. There are a number of safeguards in place, I believe, to preclude any misapplication, if you will, of that legal standard. I think certainly the justice pointed out one very, very straightforward one, and that is the fact that the trial court is in a position to deny the request for an instruction on the lesser included offense. I also think that the subsection 5 of the disorderly conduct statute would indeed serve the purpose of evidence coming forward where there's some kind of a determination that has to be made as to whether or not the alleged victim knew that there was an effort to cause that victim physical harm. So unless there are some additional questions from the panel, that's my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Keller.
Thank you.
Mr. Fortunato, you saved 3.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, may it please the court. With respect to the two crimes, when there's been discussion of imminence and knowledge, the concept with the two crimes is that one, they have different culpable mental states. The domestic violence has a knowledge culpable mental state, and the culpable mental state of disorderly conduct is recklessness. And so, of course, then there are different mens rea that a defendant would have to have in which to commit these different crimes. And of course, also in terms of families of crimes, if as the way the revised code sort of sets out them, one is a domestic violence would be an offense against a person or family, and disorderly conduct would be an offense against the public peace. In the cases in which instructions or courts refused to give instructions to juries on disorderly conduct in domestic violence cases, those courts had reasoned as such because after a full trial, those trial courts felt that there was sufficient evidence to go forward on the major crime itself, and therefore declined to give a charge to a lesser included offense. But the Barnes test still states, though, that in looking at that, you have to appraise the two, you have to look at the two statutes or the two ordinances in the abstract without looking at the individual facts and circumstances of each case. And even if you look, as opposing counsel mentioned about the subdivision 5 of the disorderly conduct ordinance A5, in looking at that, you still have to take into account division A in that first sentence, because you have to read, you still have to read the issue of inconvenience or annoyance along with the specific behavior component of the fifth subdivision of the ordinance. So even if you take one of those five sections of the disorderly conduct, you still have to include in the equation the element of inconvenience or annoyance. And inconvenience or annoyance are not elements of domestic violence threats. So I respectfully request that the court would rule in favor of the appellant and discharge him then.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.